Webinar with Adam R. Welcome to 3PNR. I'm your host, Adam R., and joining me for this episode is Archbishop Ronald File Enright. How you doing, Ronald?
Pretty good, thank you. And you?
Doing well. Thank you for being on. I really appreciate your time. Let's get started with what got you to become an archbishop? What put you on that path?
Well, I think it really started through it was a supernatural event that occurred in my life many, many, many years ago. And through this vision I had, I saw myself many years in the future wearing a black suit and a Roman collar and playing the part as a parish priest. And then as time went on, I received holy orders in 1977. That's the ordination into the priesthood. And then I expressed an interest to my jurisdictional bishop. I told him I was interested in exorcisms, the ministry of exorcisms. And he suggests I contact this bishop who became my mentor. And I was in training for about 4 weeks. Four years. And as a result, at that point, I was elevated and appointed as the exorcist for that jurisdiction that's in Los Angeles. And at that point, you know, it's, I guess, the rest is history. Not really, but there's a lot of things I could add.
Well, yeah.
I'm giving you a synopsis anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you've been doing it since 1981, right?
No, I've been actually in ministry since 1976.
Wow. And then you got involved with becoming an exorcist. So what year did that start?
That was in 1982.
That's a lot of years of experience. So far, let's get into some of the more interesting cases you worked.
Okay, well, let's see. I guess we're going to keep this PG, correct?
Hey, look, there's no one here telling me what to say or do, right? In other words, if you're in this podcast, you say something, you're not going to hear, or you're not going to hear, you know, none of that. So,
okay, well first, I'd like to tell you that that all of my events took place over a period of 41 years, and I can tell you my very first ritual, which I could remember as it was yesterday. And that was 1979. And I remember it so well because that was the first and only time I actually dedicated on myself because of what I've seen. And this was in a ritual. I was an assistant to a bishop who was an exorcist for many years. And sometimes, you know, you think that you could handle just about anything. And you have the head knowledge as to what you might see and experience. But until you actually experience something that's really supernatural, then it'll hit you as to like, wow, you'll step back and say, unbelievable. And then, of course, a lot of physical things could take place at that time. All this leaves a very deep impression in your subconscious, and it really alters your whole perception from that point on in regards to the spiritual things that we come in contact with on a daily basis. And so if you like, I can start with the very first exorcism I did. And there's so many. I'm going to tell you the one that took place about 38 years ago. And this was in Los Angeles. My main ministry has been in downtown Los Angeles in California. The majority of the people that we've helped were transients and indigents that live in the apartment complexes on Skid Row. Most of them are known as hotels. And in Los Angeles and Skid Row, there's at least 200 Skid Row hotels. And, you know, and you have the you have people that check into these hotels, and most of them never check out. This is like their last stop in this world, if you will. A lot of people have not only committed suicide, but there are a lot of crimes, overdose, things of this nature. And these are the people who I believe have some type of demonic oppression going on within themselves in order to bring them to a state where they are willing to do these things and accept all the negative things that we're taught in life that we should try to avoid. And that would be, of course, drug abuse. It would be even homicide. It would be a multitude of things. These interesting buildings are like 13, 14 stories high. These are the hotels in downtown. And many of people have jumped from the roof or from their windows to their death. And as a result, they leave a residual. And that residual stays within the room. And as a result, any of these hotels that you should walk into, you might notice the climate would change just a bit. So much so that that you'd take a moment and say, wow, what in the heck is this? You'll either feel a thickness in the air, or it's like maybe, you know, you just landed on Mars and you're stepping out of your spacecraft for the first time and the air is so thin or heavy. And as a result, there's like a major change that goes on. And you start looking around and wondering, you know, what's going on? And then sometimes you're able to smell certain things. And your sense of smell is heightened when you're involved in these type of assessments, especially when it's reported as some form of demonic infestation. If that takes place, then, you know, the whole everything is open to just about anything. That means everything from demonic possession to demonic severe oppression, which I might add a lot of serial killers fall in that category. They all fall into that demonic oppression. There's a hotel in a very famous hotel in downtown Los Angeles. I'm thinking if I should mention the hotel by name.
You could. Yeah, go ahead.
I will. Okay. It's the Cecil Hotel. The Cecil Hotel is on Main Street. And this is a Skid Row hotel. This is a building that's been around since the turn of the century. And as a result, there have been so many people that have been murdered or committed suicide. And as a result, this hotel is extremely active in regards to the invisible things that actually take place. And humans, we can actually sense it or sometimes witness these unbelievable things that take place. As a result, you remember the Night Stalker?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually just watched that documentary a year ago. That freaked me out.
Yeah, that was in the Cecil Hotel, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And as a result, his residual is behind. His victims, their residual is left behind. When I say residual, I'm talking about spiritual activity that still roams the hallways and make all types of sounds. And for the longest time, there was one hotel, not the Cecil, another hotel, that complained about. This hotel is called the Roosevelt Hotel. As a result, the tenants would complain that on the third floor, somebody would be screaming, okay, to the top of their lungs and banging on doors and these doors were being banged all along the floor, the third floor. And the screaming was just intense. It just was really loud and so on. And so the manager and management, came, they investigated and found that there was, nothing that they could come up with. I think one person in the management said it was probably one of the tenants, and maybe he was, you know, high and just doing bizarre things. But there was no real proof of that, you know, ever happening, except for what was left behind, which was the screaming and the sounds and the banging on walls and doors and things of this nature. It's a pretty interesting thing. Somebody in the management, in fact, I think it was a general manager, contacted our organization. And our organization is the Order of Exorcists. We're the original Order of Exorcists, which I found back in 1982. We've been around for a long time. But what made us more interested in this particular type of ministry were the requests that we were receiving, especially in the hotels and from management. And then they would talk about strange sounds, strange smells, things of this nature. So I remember one case where I went into one of these hotels and they were complaining about the banging and shouting along the hallways, especially at night. So I arrived with my team, and I always have a team with me because each of us have a very important role to actually engage with, especially when we start collaborating We all have to be on our toes. The person who is who's taken charge and who's been delegated as the cameraman, he is recording everything from the outside to the inside, the hallways, the doors, the cracks in the ceilings. He just records everything. And the second person we have is the lead investigator who would probably handle the questionnaire. We have a questionnaire that when we are confronted with the victim and the victim tells us, you know, their story, then we have a series of questions. We do this in a very analytical way because we concentrate not only on the mental changes, the physical changes, and also the outward manifestations that take place. And so we go down the questionnaire, we go down each question, and as we do, we find out more and more about the individual. Understand that not everyone that says that they have a demonic issue or they're possessed are truly are, because this is something that's very rare. But demonic activity does take place, and we have to verify everything before we do our thing. I don't know if I'm being as descriptive as I should be, but I can tell you that people had smell. The smell, the odor was coming from the third floor. And as a result, when we walked in, I recognized it almost immediately. It's the smell of someone who's died. And there's a, I don't know if any of your listeners can relate to that, but anyone who passes on and who's left 24 hours later, there's a terrible stench. And so when, as soon as I walked in, there was a stench. I recognized it almost immediately. And then I started to inspect the first floor, second floor, and third floor, and fourth floor. And we're just basically looking for a clue as to why these, where these smells have come from. You know, there's a cause and effect in everything that we do in life. Okay. And as a result, there's a residual that always lasts for forever. And so we're looking for the residual. We're looking for what caused the odors that come from the third floor. And we looked and could not find anything. In fact, we went into all the rooms and the management was very cooperative in terms of opening and each and every door. There's about, I'd say about probably close to 800 residents in this hotel.
Wow.
And, so it's pretty big. We did the third floor. We completely examined everything. We couldn't find anything in regards to where the odors were coming from. And then one of my investigators, he's actually a general contractor, and that's what he does for a living. And he volunteers his time to be one of our assessors. Anyway, he made a suggestion that we look up in a it's not called an attic. It's the room above the structure of each hotel. I guess maybe that is the attic.
Probably like a maintenance crawl space, right?
Crawl space, that's it. Thank you. That's exactly where it is. He suggested we look through the crawl space and see if there's anything dead, like a rat or something. So the manager told us that we had to come back 24 hours because he had to make sure that everything was okay and he'd have the proper permission and allow us to do this. So we did. We did get the permission the following day. And we got our flashlights. The lead investigator decided to make the first steps, and he went through this crawl space. And it was like it looked like a puzzle almost, because it has all these canals and going every direction and so on. So as he started to crawl in, there were, of course, a lot of insects, roaches, water bugs, really gross.
Everything that's attracted to decay.
Everything, yes. And so as he's walking in and he screams, he called out to me and said, you have to come and see this. And so, of course, I didn't really intend to get dirty, but it happens. So I crawled in there, and I'm right behind him, and there's like a little ledge. The ledge was nine inches of drop, and then it was like just kind of like dropped down to the main crawl space. So you happen to look there, and sure enough, the smell was so strong. I mean, you wouldn't believe it. We had to call the authorities because what we found and what it looked like was somebody that was totally decayed. Their flesh was rotting away, and the rats were eating his flesh, And so the medical examiner for the County of Los Angeles, he came in and you know, they have their whole crew. They went in and they retrieved the body in pieces. And apparently they had to try to find out who this person was. And as a result, you know, they came down with several different ways to approach this as to whether or not it was a homicide. Huh. And if I'm not mistaken, they determined it wasn't a homicide, but it was a person that was extremely high on drugs.
Yeah.
Decided to walk through the crawl space, got himself caught somehow, dropped down this little ledge, and he just was stuck there. So he, after his, you know, episode of being high, he came down and started his starvation diet. Well, that happened until, I don't know, for at least a couple of months. And he was up there for quite a while. And anyway, that's what the coroner said, that that was the cause of death. But very interesting. The sounds we heard, I believe, especially at night, was him actually screaming for help. He was probably pounding on the walls of the crawl space, trying to hope to get the attention of someone. And as a result, as he was banging on the walls, you know, and so nobody heard him. Which does happen, because in the daytime, the place is really very loud. And so it's really hard to hear anything. At night is when you hear everything. And that's what everyone was hearing. They heard a muffled voice and someone banging and possibly saying, help me, I'm stuck, or help me, I'm in trouble, or whatever. And in any event, we did find him, and he was retrieved. And that was an interesting story. But
yeah, I mean, those, and not to mention, those buildings are made from concrete with a lot of insulation. Like,
yes,
it's good luck being hurt in there, right? That's scary.
A lot of these hotels were used back in the 1920s and 30s to transport alcohol underground, because it was illegal. And so these hotels there's several hotels that are linked together and have a tunnel in the basement. And the basement is like this one hotel I was telling you about is hooked up to another three other hotels. And I think there's one business structure that's on 3rd and Broadway. And their basement leads to about three or four hotels underground. So there's a lot of history there. And as a result, there's a lot of things that took place during that time. A lot of people were murdered because they crossed the mob or, you know, whatever the case is. You know, lots of people and bodies have been missing. And as a result, it's an interesting fact that the population on Skid Row is a majority of people on Skid Row in these downtown areas are indigents, and they have no family or no one they could, you know, call or say, you know, they have a home and so on. And so they wander down on Skid Row. A lot of them are addicted to drugs, which also can also be a form of demonic oppression when a person starts experimenting and looking for things that may, you know, that they may enjoy in terms of trying to enhance the enjoyment of their life. So they'll start, you know, playing with drugs and things of this nature. I really do believe that's part of the darkness. The darkness wants us to, be off our game and concentrate on things that are detracting from the real life. And so people do, you know, they do the recreational drugs and then it gets on and it becomes a major, major issue in their lives. And again, you have people that have, they're down on their luck and they have to steal in order to support their habits. And to do that, sometimes it takes a good mugging or two. And there have been lots of people that have been found dead in alleys in the downtown area. And with no identification, they were indigents. And as a result, they were either a John Doe or a Jane Doe placed in Potter's Field at the very end, bodies never being reclaimed.
Well, to support what you said, I'd spoken to a lot of paranormal people, some afterlife people like Roberta Grimes, even some people of science. And when you look at the human brain, I say this a lot, the human brain on the planet, still the most complex computer on planet Earth still. And when you look at it under, you know, imaging, you could see it has receptors in it, right? So to support what you're saying, when you're high on drugs or you're inebriated on alcohol and you're in a weakened state of consciousness, an outside energy could easily infiltrate at that point.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's one of the bigger, and another thing that you were talking about earlier about the residual, that's another thing I've been hearing more from the near-death people and the afterlife people. When someone dies from a gunshot, like instantly, or if they jump off a building and it's instant, or so, even in a drug overdose where your consciousness isn't really understanding what's happening, you know, your energy stays behind because it's probably in that state of confusion. Like, what happened to me? Where am I? Right? Because I often hear people say that when they're on their deathbed, that they see relatives or there's someone there to greet them, or even like their representative, I suppose. But when you die instantly, that representative doesn't have the opportunity to you know, make it time for you to move on. So you're stuck here behind. Does that sound about right?
It actually is. Yeah. What it is, and what we are energy. Okay. Our essence is energy. And that's a scientifically proven fact.
Right.
Each of us are a ball of energy. And that's how we exist in this body that we call a shell. And so that's how we exist. When something very traumatic happens to us, it's my belief that that person is thrown into a state of chaos, has no idea what the heck happened because he's been pushed out of his body. And so as a result, there's a residual that's left behind, not only on this side of the plane, but also with the body. There's a slight an energy residual that's left behind.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't come, by the way, I don't come from any kind of experience at all or science as well. It's more theory, but if, like you're saying, and I support that too, because I think our consciousness and I think our soul are the same thing. It's like you said, it's energy. And so when people describe entities touching them and it's, you know, whether it be a pleasant touch or a non-pleasant touch, it's going to feel the same. It's going to be bad because they have to manipulate energy to touch you.
That's right. That's the truth. I have to share this real quick story with you.
Sure. Ron, you might want to move a slightly closer to your mic a little bit.
Oh, okay. How is this?
Much better.
Okay. This happened many years ago. This is once again a Skid Row hotel. I'm in there. The case was demonic possession. I have a team of investigators. They do the first contact interview. And then they perform an assessment based on what they see, what evidence they collect, and things of this nature. And then once they have all this information, they send it to me. And then I look and review. I review the video. I review the interview, the questionnaire that we have them answer. I review everything. You see, and I'm looking for like outside manifestations that are taking place in and within the individual. And then after that, you know, we request that each person that request our services, they have to do two things. They have to, number one, give us some documentation stating that it's a psychic evaluation that was done by a psychiatrist. Number two, they have to have a physical examination. And the reason why we insist on this is because the symptoms of demonic possession, they can mimic very close to other things that would fall into the psychosis of the individual. And so if that be the case, we have to really know exactly what we're dealing with. So after I have the assessment reports, I give them to our psychiatrist. We have three doctors who are psychiatrists, and they are medical doctors, and they look at the that psychological form and report. And so they look at it, and if they see anything that's outside the norms, or they have a very strong opinion about what they're reading, then they refer me and give me the information I need so I can make a decision as to whether or not we're dealing with the real, genuine thing. And this whole process sometimes takes anywhere from a month to 6 months. That's just in the investigation process. The reason being is we're relying on other outside agencies to actually provide us with the documents that we need, the psych evaluation and the physical examination. And sometimes these doctors, they, you know, it's on their time. And so what they'll do is they'll send it to us, you know, when they have a chance. It's not a priority for them. So as I said, just the initial assessment can take anywhere from a month to 6 months. That's the simple way to put it, but it has to be done.
Everything has to be done by the steps. And it is my belief of getting back to the energy of life. I believe that we have a signature, a unique expression. And in that expression has our soul, our spirits, and our personalities, and all the other things that go with it. It makes us so unique from one another. And so when we leave this plane of existence, I really do believe that we leave a residual behind. And sometimes, depending as to how the person passed on, if it was like something like murder or suicide or something like that, or something unexpected, like a car, you know, head-on collision with a car or something, they're in a state of limbo. That is, they have the ability to look at their own body and literally float over their body, and they can actually see everything that's happening within the room. And in that time, understand that their mindset is in a complete chaos situation. They can't explain as to what's actually going on. Yet I also believe that there are people that have passed on that have no idea that they've passed. They think they're still alive. And as a result, you know, they find it quite strange that they can roam around and try to talk to someone, get their attention, and they're being totally ignored, which is pretty interesting.
Which I imagine would cause them to be a little bit more ambitious in their approach, right?
That's exactly right. There's a thing called a poltergeist effect, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if there's a poltergeist effect, you know, and it's a German translation meaning noisy ghost. Okay, if the ghost or the spirit is actually causing things to move, throwing things, trying to get the attention of the living, you're gonna hear what's going on, even though it's being the action is being generated from another realm of existence, and it's like it could be parallel to our existence, but as a result, they're able to interact with certain people, especially those who are.
Consider this. Let's say one's trying to get attention of someone, and then you give it attention and it notices it, it's going to attach to you.
That's right.
Another interesting thing to note, too, is that every bit of information that you hear and see flashes into your brain, and as a result, it leaves a physical mark on the cortex of the brain. So when they do an autopsy and they pull the brain out, they'll see all these creases and wrinkles and so on. Those are the impressions of memories that individual was able to take in while they were living. So it's really, really interesting. So everything that, as you said, you know, our brain is so massive in terms of what we could do. And we've only touched the surface as to what we could do. There are people in the world that actually show areas of things that they could either be telepathic or they could move things physically with their mind. And as a result, these things are real. And it's all because of the brain. The brain's so complex. And God made us in such a wonderful way that we have to discover our own abilities, and some of those abilities are not only being intuitive, but also knowing, having the inside knowledge of being caring and loving, and all these things are smashed into this one thing that we call a brain.
The brain. If you look at the brain, I think it's the same hardware across the board for all of us. The only difference is some of us have different software, right? I say this a lot. I think everyone has the ability to be either psychic or intuitive. It's just, do you have that software, you know, or can you upload a software, if that makes sense to you?
Yeah. I think that we all have the capability of doing amazing things, and we may not know what those amazing things are, not for another, I don't know, 100 years or whatever, if civilization is still around. I think as the years go on, we become more and more advanced in terms of the things that we have access to within ourselves and that we could turn on or enhance. And that goes for everything. There are some people that are gifted and they have a memory that they can remember things and in detail that may have taken place years ago. There are people that actually can look at an individual, not only have that empathy that we all have, but have the ability to see the thoughts of someone else, the telepathic, you know, ability. That's a real thing. In fact, it's interesting. In the The U.S. military had, which you probably are familiar with this, the U.S. military, they had a special branch of the service. This was in the 70s, I think. So it was supported by, you know, by the Pentagon and our military forces. And they acknowledged the point that there was, and trying to test the soldiers for psychic abilities. And as a result, and that's a very real thing. I think that happened because Russia was doing the same thing. They had a part of their military, which was actually undergoing all of these tests and trying to develop their abilities and so on. So I think this has always been. The thing is that we all have those abilities. You know, when somebody says to me, well, I'm a psychic, I said, well, great. You know, that's great. It's a, you're enhanced. Well, that is, you take on that wonderful persona. But you have to make sure that it's something that can be used for good.
But you also got to make sure you downloaded it from the right source, right?
That's right. Exactly right. Because, you know, there are a lot of dark forces that will give you that ability. But, you know, there's a trade involved. And everything has a price. And when you're dealing with the evil of darkness, the demonic entities, you're dealing with someone who doesn't play a fair game.
Right.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
On that note, what, in your opinion, what exactly are demons?
Demons, according to what we believe and what is supported in the scriptures, demons are fallen angels. Now, what happened was in the very beginning when there was an angel called Lucifer, and Lucifer was God's favorite creation. God would look upon Lucifer, and he was just saw the absolute perfect being in this, and being is a loose term I'm using, in the spirit. Okay, and as a result, God just loved this one Lucifer character. He turned around, and of course, he was filled with pride and wanted to be like God because God loved him so much. He just wanted to be just like God. God would not have that. God says, you know, you have your position, and this is all you are. You're not like me. Well, there was a big battle over that, and as a result, God threw Lucifer, now we know as Satan, out of heaven, and while he was going, and as while he was being sent to earth, Lucifer, who's now Satan, took one third of the angels that were in heaven. Those one third of the angels, they also basically believe everything that that Lucifer was believed and what his stance was, and so on. So Lucifer took one third of the angels, and these fallen angels we now know are referred to as demons.
So the big question, right? I'm sure you get it a lot. What is the church's position on UFOs and aliens?
Okay, I'm going to give you my view on this because I think it's more relevant at this point.
Indeed.
Okay, first of all, I believe, and in fact, I've talked about this, a few years back. I did a paper on this. When I actually lined up, I had a paper with about 40 different individual actions that were taken and that can be seen and witnessed when a person has a demonic possession. And then I did some research online in regards to what takes place when a person claims to be abducted and all the other ramifications with that. And I made a list of all those things. And then I started comparing the two. And you would not believe how close. In fact, I'd say about maybe 90% of everything that happens to a person who is abducted by a UFO or some kind of alien happening going on in their life, they are like so close to what happens to a person who's possessed by a demonic entity. Okay, now I have two theories. Okay, but my first hypothesis is this. When a person sees a shadow person, a dark figure, or something flying in the air, okay, can't be explained, but it's filmed and captured. In fact, you know, as you know, the military has a recent video in regards to a real UFO, a real something from another worldly, you know, plane.
Right.
And so my hypothesis is this, is that those things that you see that we identify as unidentified flying objects, they are probably a time machine. And they are people who are from our race that are in the future. And they decided to come back in time to study their to study our present, which is their history. And maybe they want to be instrumental in forming our history so we won't kill ourselves or something. You know, it's a really interesting thing to think about. So I think the UFOs you see and all the abductions and so on, those can actually be done by time travelers who take people in to study them. Not only if you read about in the same lines about the cattle mutilation, you know, there are lots of cows that have been dissected and, you know, very high tech in terms of what was used in terms of lasers to actually dissect these the cattle. That, of course, would also be like the same as saying that what they're doing is they're looking into it and they're actually examining the animal itself. And perhaps maybe these are experiments that they've been doing since we've, you know, first realized that we're being seen by some other source. And that source, as I said, could be us. We are looking at we're looking at ourselves from the future and maybe trying to change something in our present time. That's one hypothesis I have.
Yeah.
And I think it's valid.
Well, I could subscribe to that, because when you look at the mutilations, it's probably them trying to figure out something went wrong, maybe in the food chain, that caused a problem with us, and we got to investigate it, right? And if, let's say I go back in time, let's say I could travel back in time with my consciousness to an earlier version of myself. Well, the rules are, if I did do that, I can't make waves. I can't, you know, put stocks down on Google because you can't make waves. You could make maybe minor adjustments. So with time travel, you really can't alter what's already happened because you don't know the outcome of that. But for observation purposes, yeah, I could subscribe to that.
It's a possibility that it's already been tampered. This person that we know as Hitler, maybe he would have never came into existence, but some time traveler did something somewhere, and as a result, there was some kind of a effect that actually took place and changed history. So our history is what we now know as to what happened in Germany and other things. You know, maybe something did, or someone from the future did alter something. We have no idea, and we never will know, actually.
Well, not in our lifetime, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
maybe when we pass, yeah, you know, and then, of course, everything will become known to us, and we'll say, hey, that's exactly right, or that's exactly what I said.
Yeah, you know, because, listen, as a kid, for me, I was told about heaven and hell, and, you know, the one thing pitched to me as a kid was the Tower of Babel, right? How they struck it down, and God changed us by, you know, nation and language, etc. And then we have NASA. So what I realized is that heaven and hell potentially is, they're different, like you were saying, planes of existence, right?
Right.
I view God, or as the many religions as I've read about, and I've read about a lot of them, it seems to be that God's an architect. Because if you look at the universe, not just our solar system, not just our galaxy, but other galaxies, it seems mechanical, engineered, right? Like our moon and our planet. And it's distance from our moon and the size of the moon and what it does for our tidal waves and our harvests, that's by design, by design. So it looks like an architect had a hand in that.
Absolutely. Everything has its proper proportion. Everything has been, I mean, even down to our DNA. Okay. I mean, think about the complexity of who we are, the way we think, perceive life to be as we experiment and go off into our own thing. I think, and I believe, this is my second hypothesis, is that we are the only ones in the universe. I believe that everything we see in regards to UFOs, things of that nature, could be demonic, could be maybe Satan's way of distracting us so we could get our attention off and not on the real things that matter in life. So as a result, it could be a complete diversion. Okay, UFOs and everything, yeah, those things could actually be seen. Maybe it's a diversion. Okay, Satan has that power. He can do that. He can make things materialize things, and we could witness these things as long as it's in the area of deception. And so this is my second hypothesis, which also would account for all the planets in the solar system, how they're perfectly balanced, and how they seem to be around our planet, the third rock of the sun. And as a result, you know, the everything that we see, the light and darkness, the weather, I mean, it's perfect. The oxygen we breathe, everything is perfect. It's ideal. And it was all designed for us, not mentioning who we are. We are designed so, and so complex. If there's billions and billions of brain cells that we will never have access to, but yet it exists. And when we're ready in time, perhaps we will be able to explore out and go into those other areas. So it's quite interesting.
Indeed. I also make room for the idea of this. You're talking about the architect God, right? The almighty creator. There are many. There's one hypothesis that there are many bubbles of different universes, right? And there's many different galaxies.
Yes.
Perhaps he made life equivalent to us elsewhere. Like Earth, I personally think Earth is a proving ground. And it can almost be relatable to the Bible. Depending on how you behave here, is if you're bad, you get recycled. You got to try again. If you're really good and they need you here, you get recycled. You got to come here again and help us. Or you go to the next plane, depending on what your behavior is from that point. But there's probably many Earths out there where he has, again, an architect has designed so many with equivalent kind of type of life that, it, you know, for someone, for an architect that amazing, I personally, that's, you know, this isn't like anything proven, but I personally believe there's life on many different planets, and they have, and then their own version of proving grounds. And then there are different planes and different vibrations and levels you get to, personally, anyway.
There have been things discovered on the moon, for example, and other meteors and so on, where there's some kind of living organism. But in terms of being the centered people that we are, in terms of mindful people, I believe that, science supports this. If we talk strictly science, it's been confirmed that there's now 11 dimensions that are in existence. And this is what I'm told. According to the theorists, scientists may confirm that there's at least 11 dimensions that are happening. And as a result, we could be a clone on each of those dimensions. And those dimensions are not so far that we cannot touch them if we wanted to, because each dimension is probably about 3 or 4 inches from our physical body. So we have like imagine a tree trunk, and it has all those rings, you know. If you cut the tree and study the actual trunk, you'll see all these rings in the wood. Well, this is very much like us. We have those rings around us. Each ring is actually another version of ourselves and slightly altered. But so each happening is actually mimic after us, and we're like and we might not even be the original. We might not even be the main core. We could be one of those individuals in another dimension, and so maybe we're just mimicking the dimension just before us, or maybe just after us. So it gets really, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's science speculates that there's parallel existence right next to us. There's a whole other universe directly overlapping us anyhow, and we just can't perceive it.
Yep. Absolutely great.
So on another question I'll ask you, the idea, because, you know, planet Earth, according to science, is 4 billion-ish years old, give or take. The idea that perhaps another civilization existed here prior to humanity, predates even religion for that case. In some of your exorcists or some of the spiritual claims that you come across, are any of these, you know, an energy that doesn't seem to be human, period?
I would say so. I say that, you know, there are lots of entities that are not human, but they are alive, at least in our form of thinking. They are alive and they do exist. And they do interact with us from time to time. I believe in angels. I believe angels are there and they're with us at all times. And what they do is, the angels, according to the biblical account, is angels are messengers of God. But they are also guardian angels that are all around you. And I believe that God has already predestined our entire life. Now, we have the choice of actually following our own path through just hard convictions and so on, we can actually alter that change. But that's where the angels may come in and just bounce us back on the main road. There are things that happen in our life where we just, it was a close call, you know, we almost died as a result of being electrocuted or falling in front of a car or some kind of thing that could have destroyed us. But at the same token, understand that if it's not within God's plan, if that's not been predestined, and somebody hits you with a car and you're like maybe in a state where you're going to exit this world, if that's not in the plan, God will send an angel, and that angel will assist that person, help them in such a way, and persuade them to go the other direction, so they can remain on their path, on their journey. If that makes any sense. But
no, I get it. You know, real quick to kind of add to that, in the field and a lot of years of exorcisms or the study thereof, have you encountered an entity that does not respond to your method of removal?
Yes.
In that case, what happens?
They just stay and they remain. They're part of the setting. They're part of where you're at, and there's nothing you can do about it. They're not evil, but they are maybe human souls that have been caught between here and there. And as a result, they're just hovering around. They may not communicate with you, or they may. I mean, I have been in situations, and again, I have to go back to all the investigations I've done in these hotels, where I actually witnessed transparent images of people in the hallway, all around the room, just standing and kind of like, you know, watching, doing the thing. I remember one thing, one spirit I happened to look at, and it was a nurse. And this nurse was, looks like she was from the maybe 1920s, 1930s. She had a candy striped suit on, you know, and, you know, the little bib and everything and the big hat. She was looking in a file cabinet. I actually saw the file cabinet she was looking into. And I will never forget that. And that's totally amazing. Anyway, she went on to do her thing, you know, whatever she was doing at that time. And she had she was not aware that I could see her or anyone else can. And so as a result, you know, I saw that. I also saw another image just as in the same hotel. Well, I was looking at a television and it was turned off. But I looked at the television and I glimpsed into what looked like a hospital room. And there was a guy that was just about ready to pass on. And he had his whole family around him. And I'm watching this like it was a movie. But actually, it was on TV. And the TV was turned off, you know. And it was actually something that was supernatural. And there's a term that's used in the parapsychology field, which is remote viewing.
Yes.
Remote viewing is, do you know? You know.
I'd spoken to a couple of people, Tony Civiaelli being one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible that what I was actually witnessing was some form of remote viewing, and that would explain a lot of things why I couldn't interact with these individuals, these entities. Yeah,
that's a good theory. I didn't think of that. Like you can see their energy, but you can't reply. They can't reply to you.
Right. Exactly. Huh.
I never considered that.
Yeah, it's something to think about. You know, we live in a wonderful existence now, because we could actually see some of the things that our ancestors may have totally took for granted, or they were totally oblivious to. There are so many miracles that are happening all around us. And sometimes we see the people, we see the things, we see the animals, and they're all like fantastic. I mean, it's like, this is the best time to be alive, because now we could actually see these things that our ancestors took for granted. And I think it's just wonderful. It's exciting. In fact, just talking about it, I'm just getting all excited.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm an old guy, okay? I'm over a half a century old. I mean, I'm going to be 70 years old next year. I'll be 70 years old. That's an old guy.
Well, you're in great shape, I'll tell you that much. I hope I look like you at 70.
But you know, I could remember the things when there was no such thing as the internet. When TVs were black and white, there was no such thing as color TVs. Right. I could remember when there were no cell phones and nothing. Not even pages were. And yet I remember all this back then. I guess it makes me pretty ancient.
Or packed full of wisdom, you know. So I'm definitely going to be having you on again, because now I have to have a whole new list of questions. You've made me think a little bit. So before we close, though, I want to ask you about this. Eventually, like someone like Elon Musk and some of these other companies are going to put a chip in your brain, which is eventually going to allow the subconscious and the conscious to act, you know, simultaneously, allowing it, which I think is going to bridge the gap between what we call paranormal and the average normal. I think we're going to be able to see and interpret a lot more once that happens. What are your thoughts on that?
I think a new term is going to come up. Okay. You have the paranormal, you have the normal or the natural, but then there has to be another term that someone will think of, because that type of thing is just inevitable. That is going to happen. We're going to, as time goes on, we're going to progress, and we're going to become more analytical, and not only in our technology, but how technology can interact with us. And as a result, I watched something the other day on television. It was called he stated that we are cyborgs. Okay. In fact, it was Musk. It was Elon Musk. He says, we are already cyborgs, he says. He says, we have our instruments. We have a cell phone on us. It's mechanic. It always stays with us. You know, we can communicate. You know, we have our computers. We have, you know, all these other things. And so, in essence, everything that's tied into us, that's mechanic, that is actually physically something that has nothing to do with our very being, but yet we're connected. He says that it falls into the category of being, or being identified as being, a cyborg. And I did read some of the studies and some of the things that he had said recently about implanting a chip in the brain. And this way you'd have internet access without an actual screen. You could just see something and just characterize it in your own internet. And then anything that you want to bring up, you can bring up, you know, based on this chip, would enhance anything you want. And that's maybe a little fashion, but to me, that sounds a little scary.
I mean, I agree, because at some point, like, you're going to want an upgrade. Like, I need some new eyes. I want to be able to see better, right? We're going to get to a point where we're going to be immortal, because we're going to figure out how to upload and download consciousness. There's companies out there that are working on that currently, to upload and download your consciousness. I don't think it's going to be your soul / your conscious exactly, more of a duplicate.
Yeah, you know, there's another thing, too, that's been said, which is true. And the scientific community is proving this, and they're endorsing this as days go on. Our technology will become so advanced, and it will become aware of its existence, that it might be a major problem in regards to maybe they will intellectually come to the conclusion that they don't need the human race. And there might be a rebellion. Sounds like one of those movies. But, I mean, it's possible. Every year that goes by, our technology is getting more and more creative and more decisive in all these other things that we've never thought about in the past. And so, I mean, who knows? Maybe it's a StarNet all over. Maybe it's a real StarNet that's going to take place.
Skynet. Yeah, listen, those people that make those movies, they're geniuses. Because if you think about it, everything they played with in movies in the past have come to fruition today. Maybe not exactly, but the exact idea has come to fruition. The idea of speaking to people at FaceTime, Bluetooth, everything you example in movies come to light eventually. So the idea that AI would rebel...
I'm going to age myself and say this. I can remember reading the comics, and Dick Tracy was a very well-known character, and he had a watch. And in his watch, he could just talk into this watch. Okay, it was amazing. You could actually see the person you're talking to, and it had this communication. Of course, it was so far-fetched. The same thing with Star Trek, okay, their communicators. Yep. They look like our cell phones, actually. You know, they actually flip open, and you talk, and so on. I mean, this type of technology was never even thought of. They must have had these people in the very beginning. They must have had some kind of glimpse of the future, or something.
Well,
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I'd say this a lot too with science. Today's science is yesterday's theory, and yesterday's theory was the imagination of a child. It's all, you know, it all works symbiotically.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, now that you say it, I have a watch on right now. It's a Garmin Venue 2 Plus. This thing not only it tells me when I'm stressing, tells me when I need to hydrate, it tells me my sleep, it makes suggestions when I should drink water. I mean,
yeah, so pretty good.
We're not far away.
Yeah.
Well, before we close out, if anyone wants to contact you, or do you have any like websites or anything you want to tell anyone about?
Yeah, I have a website called it's www.orderofexorcist.com. I also wrote a book, published a book, and it's now out there, and it's called The Exorcist Secret Journal. And this is a book that I've been holding for, I hold on to my notes for 40 years. I decided to write all the highlights. It's my autobiography, but it's also out there. There's a link if they go to my website, which is www.orderofexorcist.com. They can get it on Amazon, they can get it on Blur, they can get it on all these other things.
Yeah, and I'll put links in the description for that as well. So this way people can find it just as quickly.
Excellent.
So everyone knows I'm going to be inviting the Archbishop on again, because now I'm going to compile a new list and some new dialogue, because he gave me a lot to think about today, a lot. And I like that. So it's going to be another sleepless night for me. In the meantime, I'm going to say good day or good evening to whoever's listening. And I'm going to talk to Archbishop Ron in post. So everyone have a good day or good evening.
Okay.